Hey, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to another episode of Halifax is Burning, the campus and community radio program where you're going to hear the best in Atlantic Canadian music. I'm your host, Trevor Murphy, here to be your guide for the next 60 minutes. This week on the program, David Miles stops by for an in-studio interview. We'll chat about his brand new album, Real Love. We'll talk Singing for Your Supper, and we'll also discuss our favorite Christmas tunes. Plus, we've got new tracks from Deep Fryer, Braden Lamb, and the Olympic Symphonium on the docket. But first, it's almost December, and that means that the annual year-end lists are starting to make their rounds. Yes, I've already seen a few. Next month here on Halifax is Burning, we'll be featuring playlists of some of our favorite new music from 2017. But instead of just listing albums and playing songs, we're going to try something a little bit different. Throughout December, I'll tell you about some of my favorite musical moments from local albums. The single snare hit in John McKeel's Conduit that leads to an ultimate culmination of that song. The returning opening lyrics on Stuart Legere's album Closer, Moving in Blue. The double electric bass action on several songs by Dinosaur. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to digging in to some of those songs. So in that spirit, let's get the show started with a song that features one of my overall favorite vocal performances from a 2017 Atlantic Canadian record. Pay attention in this song to how these vocals sit, how they spook, and how they linger, especially when that chorus kicks in and the harmonies lift everything to a new stratosphere. From their excellent debut, Misty, here's Not You with Soup, kicking us off here on Halifax is Burning.
Thank you. what you said, and you called it time. So why did you look back as you left me behind? And there she goes, oh, oh. And there she goes, oh, oh. Come into the light, and maybe then you'll see where love's for. Tell me what is wrong and what is right.
And now for something completely different.
Break, blinking my ears!
Jeremy!
hearing me says, because I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugging my ear.
It's a brand new single from Fredericton's Deep Fryer from a new EP they have called Rockin' Right Hard. That's a song called Jeremy, directly inspired, as a matter of fact, from a Patrick Waugh interview. That's fun. You hear a little bit of it at the end of that song. Before that, we heard from an artist named Braden Lamb, his new single called Into the Light. And then, kicking us off on the show tonight was Not You from their excellent album Misty. We heard a song called Soup. Well, from one Fredericton band to another, from Deep Fryer, a hardcore band based in Fredericton, to one of my all-time favorites. They're called the Olympic Symphonium. I guess they're a band that exists in a multiplicity of cities, though their home base technically is Fredericton, New Brunswick. The Olympic Symphonium are prepping to release a brand new album called Beauty in the Tension. Here is their new single. This one is called Glory of Love.
Let's just happiness in our home here. You can tell me what to whisper in your ear. Lie to me as you look me in the eye. Kiss me and I'll act surprised. As if it wasn't love, as if it wasn't fun, as if it wasn't part of the plan. Real love, it doesn't come around, it doesn't come around that much. So let's just fake it, let's just make it work for us tonight. Real love, real love.
Title track from the new David Miles record, Real Love. David Miles joining me live in studio here tonight on Halifax is Burning. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome. Thank you for coming by.
Hey, man, this is my pleasure. It's great to be here.
This is a super fun record.
Well, it was fun to make.
Yeah.
The idea behind the record was fun.
Tell me about that idea a little bit.
Well, I've been playing with the same guys for almost 10 years, especially like Alan and Kyle, guitar and bass.
Alan Jeffries, Kyle Kunjak.
Exactly. We've been in a trio, like an acoustic trio for a long time. We all love early rock and roll, country.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a golden era of kind of like rock, kind of rockabilly in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And like early rock and roll and we all loved it, and I thought, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this, like, in our style, but play music that people can dance to? Like, I love the folk stuff we do. I like all the music we play. But it was fun. I really wanted to have that gear in the show. I want to be able to, like, step it up, kick it up, and have fun, make people dance, and have the ability for us to really get into it, let loose. And so that's how I wrote the songs. I wrote the songs to be fun, like, to be upbeat, to be accessible, to have fun vocal parts where everybody's really involved. Like, no one's just like sitting and playing the same thing through the whole tune. It's very much like the guys are like singing backup vocals. We're really like a band.
Right.
So everybody's really engaged. And I love pop music.
Yeah.
I love the way pop music builds. And so even though it was like kind of throwback, the energy's kind of throwback, I kind of wanted it to be modern in that the way the songs are kind of structured are all about, you know, different parts and pre-choruses and choruses that really stand out, and fun that way too. You know, fun where there's big changes and big moments in the song.
Yeah, well, you're certainly no stranger to the landscape of pop music. You know, with the songs you worked on with Class, the big summer hits, and
it got me interested in it. I was always like a jazz guy. Like, honestly, that's what I listened to jazz growing up and like classical music. Then I got into like songs. You know what I mean? But it wasn't until like I was like 18 that I listened to songs, other than like the pop songs when I was a kid.
Right.
But like 3-minute songs didn't really exist. And I listened to kind of like Willie Nelson, and then got into some other kind of guitar singers type thing, you know, Paul Simon, James Taylor, those guys. But it's just been kind of working through through Classified, and obviously in developing my own songwriting, that I've just become really fascinated with the power of a great 3.5-minute song.
Yeah.
You know, the concise, nicely tight written song. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted the songs to be like that. I wanted them to move. I didn't necessarily, you know, I didn't want it all to be throwback, and I didn't all, but I didn't want to just, I can write ballads like all day long. I love ballads, but I wanted to kind of keep the ballads on this one. Just keep them just like two.
Yeah, sure. Were you using some influences? Like, were there key, I mean, you're talking about early rock and roll. There's certainly some Elvis vibes going on this. There's certainly some Roy Orbison stuff
totally.
Happening.
That's exactly where I'm at. It's basically like Al Jeffries and I went to Nashville a couple of years, and we went to RCA Studio B, which is where they all recorded.
Amazing.
And kind of you go into the room and they play all this stuff that was recorded there. And I was like, whoa, I just love all of this music. I love the way it sounds. I love the way it's recorded. And Don Gibson was another guy who recorded there. And I love Don Gibson. He wrote like Oh Lonesome Me and, Sea of Heartbreak and I Can't Stop Loving You and Sweet Dreams, all these big, big country hits. But he had this low voice. But the band rocked. And so that's kind of what I was trying to get at. It's like this, where there's still a bit of like croon. There's still a bit of like singing. It's not yell singing. Low. It's actually kind of like dramatic. But then the drums are kind of pumping. There's still this like rock and roll energy. That's kind of what I was searching for. And the influence of those guys, I felt like that's what they did. Roy Orbison's like a real singer, but the band is starting to kind of like, it's that era where people are starting to plug in. Things are starting to distort. The drummers are starting to play pretty loud. It's not jazz.
Yeah.
It's not country. It's
something new.
It's something new. And so that's kind of what I was trying to get into, and I came about it in a number of, you know, through a bunch of different influences, but those were the big ones for me.
So when you're approaching the writing of this album, knowing in your head that you are trying to write for the members of your band in addition to yourself, are you approaching the songwriting process differently because of that?
I was really thinking about how, I was thinking about songs that I knew were going to work, you know? I mean, one thing I think that we, because Al is such a great country player.
Oh, amazing.
He's such a great, like, he's world class. It's unbelievable to hear him work in that world. And I basically really wanted to write songs that were less R&B influenced, which is what I had done a lot before, and more country influenced. That was kind of the lean on this record, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of that was because I felt like we did it well as a band. It's the stuff we sing well. And it's the stuff that Al just can lay down.
Yeah.
And I got really into it. I just started listening to Willie's Roadhouse like nonstop on Sirius Satellite. It was
right.
Like this, it's what we listen to on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have for like 5 years. And it just felt like people weren't doing it as much. And it felt like, so I definitely wrote with that in mind. I wrote with kind of almost an image of what the record was going to look like. You know what I mean? It was, you know, in terms of,
I mean, aesthetically, it's outstanding. The cover alone really kind of immediately you're thrown back to a different place.
The cover was a total, total home run.
Yeah.
The cover was a total home run. That's Matt Dunlap. I mean, he's just amazing. And I've worked with him for 10 years. He's a huge part of the team.
Yeah.
And he and I nerd out about this stuff for months, dude. Like, I'm sending him pictures of clothing and pictures of Elvis and whatever. Like, we're going deep. And then I went to California with Dan Ledwell, who produced the record.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this art retreat, basically. The four of us went to Palm Springs. And it was the most luxurious. Like, I came back and I was like, I can't believe I get to do this. It's not like we were, like, spending big money and going crazy. But I went to L.A. with Dan Ledwell and Matt Dunlap, like, two of my favorite people, most creative people I know, in California. And literally, we just got to mess around for, like, 4 or 5 days in the desert. At Matt's place in L.A., you know, in all these different environments, and just be creative. We made videos. We did the artwork for the album. We ended up getting tons of stuff done, but the aesthetic of everything really, it came. It all tied together. Like, my dad used to direct these musicals. That's what he did. He directed High School Musicals.
Right.
And there was a point at which I just started to see this as something bigger than just like, you know what I mean? Where I was like, I want this to be like a full presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to have a look. I want it to have, I want it to have a vibe. I want it to almost be, you know, I want it to be dramatic in a way that a regular CD kind of isn't.
Right. Yeah. And
so I don't know that if it worked or not, but it was fun.
Is that like that approach? You seem to be the kind of artist who kind of comes, you know, never loses sight of, you know, who David Miles is, but you kind of come in and out of different genres, different influences, different things like this. So is this a process you go through with every record?
A little bit.
Yeah.
This one I went probably a little bit. I wanted it to be a little bit more consistent in a way. I wanted to dive in. I was like, whereas before I might be like, oh, let's do this track a little bit like this, let's like this, and the overall picture will be David Miles. In this case, it was like, let's go down the wormhole.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Let's
go deep into this aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Let's give it a vibe and mark it. And so it might hit people a bit weird the first time they hear it, but then they're going to get into it and realize that this is like a consistent sound, and it is fresh in a kind of a funny way. And so that's what I think is a little different. I mean, I think when I do definitely jump around, and I do, especially when the art comes in, I think about it for months. Mm. And I think about the clothes, and I just at some point I'm like, you know what, the whole thing is what I love.
Right.
I love the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And if there's one thing, if like I am anything as an artist, it's just probably someone who loves making records, loves making music. And so I do jump around genres a ton, but I think if there's one thing that's consistent, it's that I'm not faking it. At least my enthusiasm is never faked.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't do anything I don't want to do. And so even though it changes, I go way down. I get right into whatever. So when I was with Luke, I go right down whatever it is we're in, and then if we're doing bluegrass, it's that, or, mm-hmm. And so that's what keeps me going.
Yeah,
you know, that's what keeps me. That's what keeps it exciting for me. I love it.
When you were approaching the album, making this record with Dan Ledwell, you know, I think Dan's style is particularly lush, and you know, I think he has kind of like this stamp. This record doesn't necessarily have that stamp. But I'm wondering if that was a thrill for him to kind of be like, "Yep, I'm in it with you." Like, did you have that conversation before you made the record of, "We're going down this hole,
yeah,
and you're coming with
oh,
me"?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because yeah. There was a part of me that was like, oh, "Should we do these songs? Like, we're going to do an acoustic version of this album next week. We're going to record the songs as a trio, like, mm-hmm. which is because that's how we play. Like, so we're going to sit in a circle and just do it all live, basically." And there was a point at which I was like, "Well, maybe we should do it like that." You know, maybe we should just keep it acoustic so we're not totally jumping down the wormhole.
Right.
And then, but it was Dan. Dan was like, no, let's go. Let's do this. And I think what happened, what was really cool, is he wasn't playing all the instruments. Like, a lot of the times in some of the projects he worked, not in a bad way, but Dan is so proficient in so many instruments.
And super versatile.
And he's got great ideas that he can get in there and be like playing everything, basically. In this case, because we came as a band a bit, he kind of just like let us rip a bit and then walked around. His production, which was super vital, was actually just kind of sitting back, watching us play, and then turning up all our guitar amps and making them distort. And we were all way too soft. He's like, if this is going to be a rock and roll record,
right,
let's make it rock and roll. He's the one who was like, let's give it some bite. Let's distort things a little bit. Let's make the vocal really like, let's put it in that place. Let's give it some slap. Let's make it like 1950 style. Like, really go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, he created this universe in our headphones when we were recording that just put us in. We knew what the record was going to sound like then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The atmosphere was already created. He's like, starts distorting stuff, gets stuff rocking, and then all of a sudden, everybody's playing to that sound. And the huge part is the drums. Like, almost the whole record goes go 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 go.
Yeah, there's such a drive. Like, kind of train. Like,
it's not hi hats. It's not.
No. It's a lot of snare stuff. Yeah,
that doesn't happen on the record. It does not happen. Everything is between the snare or the toms. Most of it's toms. Most of it's just like boom 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 boom.
Yeah, right.
Boom boom boom. And once we got that, it's a weird thing. But that was like a big aesthetic through the whole record. And again, those were the things that I kind of felt like, oh, this is fresh.
Yeah,
this is different. Like, it's not what I expect. And so. And it gives it this real kind of weird, dark energy. And I think that all of that stuff is the stuff that Dan really facilitated.
And in the same way, too, you know, while making it a bit new, I think it also harkens back to that era of how you would record a record, like everybody in the same room just recording it, and you've got a take and here we go, and it, what it sounds like in your headphones is what it's going to sound like on the record pretty much. Like that headspace probably affects the way you perform.
I think so. And yeah, we're a live band. I want to be a live band. I love live music. I love that part. I like the human element of music.
Sure.
I also love working with Classified and working with Beats. But like in terms of what I can bring when it comes to my own band in general, I've realized that what we do really well is kind of keeping things human. You know what I mean? We're people who've played a ton together. We practice. I like practicing. I like trying to sing in tune all the time. Yeah. I like trying to be a good singer.
Sure.
And without any, you know, and so that part's still exciting to me. So I love writing songs. There's another thing that happens is that when you write a song that's, and you can play it live, you do a lot of your troubleshooting while you're playing it.
Right.
You can feel where a pre-chorus isn't working when you're playing it live. If you're doing it track style on a computer where everything's broken up into 8 bars and you have your pre-chorus, you can produce the heck out of your pre-chorus just to try to make it work when really it's a problem with the pre-chorus.
Yeah, maybe
not
it's
a problem
not
the, with the, with like how many drums you put on.
Exactly. It's not the instrumentation. Maybe it's just the part.
Exactly. Yeah. And so sometimes when you work through things live, I love that part of it because you work through a lot of the problems, the songwriting problems, which are always the most essential of the problems.
Yeah. Just to go back to the drums, that was kind of the first thing I noticed on the first track. It's like while I was listening to this song Night and Day, the drums really struck me. So I really want to play that one. Is there anything you can tell us about this song that we might not know yet?
This is the first one I wrote. This is probably, I think, one of the first ones I wrote. I wrote it without a guitar, which was funny. I was like sitting in the backyard and I was just like, I got that. I almost wrote like most of it. It was weird. Like I had the first ding, 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 ding. I had this kind of idea and then I was like, okay, well then we'll switch. And then I had the idea for the verse and the chorus almost without a guitar. And then I put it backwards and started realizing how to play it. But I kind of saw it as, I love big band stuff too, where it's like night and day, night and day. I can't seem to find a way. Again, I'm thinking about like the show and how it's going to affect people.
Too, yeah.
Totally. How I can like involve as many musicians as possible. And and the thing about the drums is that so there's these toms. So the other thing that the secret of this record is that there are actually 2 cups on a board that Josh played on almost every track, which is what we call the clippity. And it literally goes
kick, 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 k
bongos, and then he did it on this. Like, he found two, because we were like, really, what we're going for is a horse, so let's get like the most horse sounding thing ever. And he got two cups on a board, and almost on like seven of the tracks, deep in the background is a track, and he just goes,
it's like that Monty Python sketch where he's just like walking around.
Yeah, totally. That's basically exactly what I was thinking, man.
Yeah,
exactly what I was thinking.
That's awesome. Well, let's see if we can pick it out here on this song. We're chatting tonight here on Halifax is Burning with David Miles. His new album is called Real Love, and this is the song that kicks off the album. This is called Night and Day.
Sound I weave, oh, but I can't take it, I can't take it, I can't take it anymore. When I look at it, I mean on every page, I mean that every picture is a picture of your face. Night and day, I can't seem to find a way. Night and day, I can't seem to find a way. Get you off my mind, get you off my mind, get you off my mind, my mind. My blues around. Some change here without warning. There's only one sound. Sound of a kick drum four on the floor. You don't need to know how to sing anymore. The sound of your voice, the sound of your laugh, the sound of you telling me that this will never last. Night and day, I can't seem to find a way. Night and day, I can't seem to find a way. Night and day, I can't seem to find a way. Get you on my mind, 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 get you on my mind.
now to find a way to get you on my mind, 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 get you on my mind.
Night and Day by David Miles from his new album Real Love. Very excited to have David Miles here in the studio tonight on Halifax is Burning. When you are prepping to go out on the road, you know, you guys play with the band all the, you know, you're a pretty solid unit now. Are you, in light of, you know, presenting a new kind of vision for this album and this show, are you rehearsing that show? Like, is this a more old school kind of show?
Yeah, like it was different. It was different for sure. I mean, especially because even though we've played electrics a lot, we haven't done that many shows with drums and electrics. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially on the road, like taking it, doing a full album where that's the sound.
Yeah.
Because again, so much of the touring we've done is Alan playing acoustic guitar, Kyle Konjac playing upper bass, and me playing acoustic guitar and us singing together.
Yeah.
So even though the records varied, even when we're playing the classified stuff, the way we present it live is like acoustic, chill, broken down. And with this tour, we were like, no, we want to perform this kind of like the record sounds. So we're going to bring a drummer and we are going to like have amps and we're going to turn up and we're going to rock it a bit. So it did require some thinking about.
Sure.
You know, for sure. It definitely had it. The show had needed a different kind of arc than the show had before. You know, where it was just the trio and it was acoustic. Now we had, like, I knew I was going to have to do an acoustic section, but it was going to start electric and it was going to start in this 1950s world and then move through some of the classified, because I still want to play some of the songs people know from the radio and everything else. So how do I perform those in a way that work? So we kind of reinterpreted some of that stuff.
Right, in this style?
In this style.
Cool.
And then, you know, and so, but yeah, there was a lot of practicing, especially with drummers. I mean, drummers, when you're so used to playing without one, it takes a while.
Yeah.
And so we were lucky because Mike Bellier came out for kind of a good portion of the tour. And then Josh Van Tassel, who plays on the record, came out for the majority of the tour. And both of them are awesome.
Yeah.
It was really about me getting used to drums.
Right.
Kind of in the trio format, I'm the drummer.
Yeah, you're kind of providing that rhythm, right?
So it's when we don't have, when you, it takes me a long time to get used to being like, okay, the drummer's in charge of that world right now. I can lean back a little bit.
And did you? Like,
oh, yeah,
no,
I think we got
like,
pretty good.
I'm,
I think we got pretty
there,
good. Yeah. I think we got good as like a, it was, that was a big step for us, was like we became a good four-piece electric band. A lot of the times when we do it before, it would always work, but I felt like we're really not the same way that we're strong as an acoustic trio. We've just done so much work. I was like, oh man, we're cooking like that. At least it feels really good. We just put so many hours in. Every time we went out as an electric band, I was like, ah, it feels good, but I see a lot of electric bands that are just way, way better. Now, and a lot of it was because of me.
Right.
And so now I've kind of learned how to play with drums, and now I kind of learned how, where I need my guitar and how to play the electric in a real way and get involved and, you know what I mean? Like really make it my own instrument.
Did you feel like this allowed you the opportunity to be more of like, especially in the vein of this stuff, like more of like a rock and roll front man a little bit?
Did you
free yourself up?
To time. You can't not.
Yeah.
You can't not. I mean, you're playing electric guitar, man. Like you can't, like all of a sudden your stance just like naturally widens.
Yeah,
there's like certain physical things that happen when you have a heavy guitar on that you kind of like, and you crank
you're
it up.
You're bracing for it.
You got it. It's a more intense experience.
Yeah,
and I love it. I do love it. Like, I do. I got really into, I realized, like, after it wasn't going to work if I kept my guitar quiet, for instance. Like, I just needed my guitar kind of loud. I need to play it kind of quietly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I need the guitar to be actually fairly loud.
Right.
And I think all of us kind of get used to that. We all had to go into that world, figure out the right. We're not a loud band in any case.
Mm-hmm.
But just find out what the right volume is for us to make this show really work. And the tour helped tons.
Right.
Tons, man. I mean, just before the tour, I would say the biggest test was right before the tour. We did this film festival gig at the Marquee.
Yeah.
And that was like a dance show. And I knew it was going to be like, it was going to be an hour and a half at least with no ballads. And I play ballads.
Yeah.
You know, I tell stories and I play ballads. So it was a new challenge.
Yeah.
But I was like, I think this is the kind of music that's going to work for us. We're going to be able to play for a long time. We're going to be able to like extend the songs, put some long solos in it, make people dance, become a party band. And it totally worked. It was the most fun. Really, the experiment was like, can we be a good dance band?
Yeah.
Can the David Miles band be a good dance band? And I think we made it. I think we're a good dance band now.
Virtual chameleon.
I just want to be able to get thrown into different situations and succeed.
Yeah.
And so that's so I want to be able to have a show that's versatile enough and be a musician that's versatile enough that can get thrown into a bar at midnight and won't get eaten alive, and then also get do like a thing at the Rebecca Cohn, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And make it and do like a quiet, classy thing.
So speaking of quiet, classy things, you are heading back to New Brunswick to do the series of shows that you've been doing. How long have you been doing these shows now?
This is our eighth year.
Goodness, eighth year. It's called Singing for Supper, and you go and perform these shows, and the proceeds go to the local food banks, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A simple but beautiful concept.
And it's like in the malls.
talk about throwing yourself into something and trying not to like get eaten alive. Like honestly, when we first started doing this, it was painful, man. Setting up our own PA in the food courts of malls of New Brunswick and just starting to sing for an hour. And we played in Grand Falls and there were two people there.
Oh no.
Two people, and we played for like an hour and a half. You know, it was so painful. But to see this thing grow has been unreal. And it really, like, it's a challenge. I'm such a sucker for, like, these entertainment challenges, too, where you're like, I got to pull in as many people in this food court, many of which are just focused on their Manchu walk right now. You know what I'm saying?
And rightfully
and
so.
They have, absolutely. I mean, that's why they're there.
That's right, yeah.
But, like, let's try to pull them in and try to get them interested in what we're doing in a way to raise more money. Like, that I'm my job is to try to pull as many people into the mall, get them interested, focused on me for just long enough for me to go. We're here for the food banks. Let's see how much money we can raise.
Yeah.
And we've raised over $50,000.
Jeez, that's amazing.
So it's been really cool.
Yeah.
It's been real. People have really come out, and they can bring their kids, and people who can't afford to go to the other shows can come. It's easy. It's super accessible because they're in malls.
And they're usually, so they're all starting at like noon.
They're at noon. So seniors can come.
Yeah.
People with disabilities. There's a whole whack of things. There's a whole bunch of reasons that I didn't predict would be part of this experience, that have become part of this experience, that I really like.
And during these shows, are you, I would imagine, bringing the Christmas songs to the table? Last year, you made the Christmas
kind of the
record.
It's kind of the motivation of the Christmas record.
Okay.
Honestly, it was, we started doing this tour, and we just didn't know any Christmas songs. And I was like, wait a minute, we're playing at malls at Christmas. Yeah. I got to learn something.
Yeah.
So we like learned one song. Next year we learned a couple more. And then we were like, well, as we learned a few more, I was like, oh, this is fun. Actually, this can be really fun. We just got to find a way to make them our own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, if you don't want them to be cheesy, don't make them cheesy.
Yeah.
Find the good ones and play them like you would play them.
Yeah.
You know? And that was the model. It was like, take the Willie Nelson approach. Find great songs, sing them really well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't overflower them. Don't, you know what I mean? Don't like try to make them super crazy. Just try to play them really well and like do justice to these great songs. So I got totally into it. They're great. They're amazing. They have great chords.
Oh, Christmas songs are amazing, man.
They're unbelievable, right? And all of a sudden I was like, holy. And we got into them, all of us, I think. Like, I think that the enthusiasm kind of caught on. And then we were like, well, we got 8, 9 songs, 10 songs. Let's do an album.
Right.
So it wasn't motivated by like, oh, let's do an album, let's tour it. It was like, no, let's do these shows. Let's raise some money for the food banks. Okay, what do we need to take this to another level? Let's do a record.
What's your favorite Christmas song?
Oh, man. Big question. I change my mind a lot, you know. White Christmas is a perfect song.
Yeah, it's classic.
It's perfect. Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire, wicked chords, amazing chords. And I'll Be Home for Christmas. Like the big ones, they're just like these sweet jazz classics. They're just like standards. They have great voicings. And when you learn them, you kind of learn all these wonderful songwriting moves that aren't used in current popular music that often.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I think like that's the difficult thing, I think, with Christmas music is that there hasn't really been new standards. Like I think when you read things on the internet these days about Christmas music, everybody kind of seems to agree that the last great Christmas song was Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And that's like 25 years old now, 20 years old or something, you know? Like,
I was gonna say that one too, actually, because I figured that was
the one.
That's
a good song. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that was the challenge. From the songwriting perspective, honestly, that was also one of the fun things about that record was that all of a sudden, I wanted to write some original songs, clearly, because I'm a songwriter. But they had to sit up against these classics.
Yeah.
So I like, it's a weird thing to say. And I, but my, we've been going listening to the record again with my kids this year, kind of getting ready. The kids love it. I think the three songs that I wrote on the record are like three of the best songs I've ever written. It's so weird. Like, I really do. I think they're, Santa Never Brings Me a Banjo is a silly novelty type song, but it's a total win. Like, it was exactly what I was going on. For me, it was just what I was going for. So I was super pleased with how it turned out, only because it's like, I wanted to write a funny novelty song.
Totally.
It's not I wanted to write a song like Roger Miller. Mm-hmm. That's, I love Roger Miller. And I was like, I want to write a song like that. And in the end, I'm like, of all the songs that I've tried to write songs like that, that one actually kind of hit the mark. So it was a challenge. You know, it was a challenge to write Christmas songs that kind of worked. But I like the ones that we did write, and I love playing the old ones, and I can play them all. Every year I go back to learning them, and I'm just like, ah,
yeah,
what a sweet vibe.
There's a reason they stuck around, I think.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, and they're written by the best writers.
Yeah.
They're sophisticated.
Of course, like people for whom that was their job.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, they're like Irving Berlin. Like, of course, Irving Berlin knows what he was doing. You know, he's a master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are quickly running out of time. But we should just mention that the Singing for Supper shows that are taking place in New Brunswick happen on Tuesday, December 12th in Fredericton at the Regent Mall, Wednesday, December 13th in St. John, New Brunswick at Brunswick Square, and Thursday, December 14th in Dieppe, New Brunswick at the Champlain Mall. So if you got the opportunity to go out and check those out and support a really great cause, I highly recommend it. David Miles's new record is called Real Love. We're going to hear another song on the way out. We're going to play a song called Night After Night. First, you know, this is a great feat, this album. So I'm very happy to be talking to you about it.
Oh,
and it's a lot of fun, and it's really cool. And it is fun to see people, you know, jump into a project and just go head first. So
it's a real Halifax project. That's the other thing about this thing. It was, you know, I've done records in other places, and this is one of those records where, like, I worked with Dan.
Yeah.
My band's from here. Rainey and Haley Smith sing on this record. Like, I felt like it was pulling in all of these connections that I've made in the Maritimes over the last number of years to make the record. Like, the team was Kinley from PEI, Isabel Terrio and from Northern New Brunswick, all these different elements from different people that I've met. It was super amazing. We're lucky. There's a ton of amazing musicians around.
Yeah. Well, it certainly shows on the album.
Right on.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
You can sense the fun, I think, in it. And
good.
There's an excellent vibe. David Miles' new album, Real Love, is available right now. You should go out and buy it. And buy a copy for someone for Christmas. It would make an excellent gift. Here is a song from that record. It's called Night After Night. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks. Right on. Thank you.
They offer to take our coats when we walk in the door. They rush, we don't. Tonight we're moving slower. Tonight we're moving slower. The restaurant is empty. Table of our own. Your eyes are drifting from me. But looking at your phone, looking at your phone. Ring, 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 ring. Let's not pretend this isn't the end. Let's not pretend that he's just a friend. It's calling night after night, day after day. You leave the room, so I don't hear what you say. But I know he is, and I know what he does, and I know what he means to you. So you. How it would end.
is calling night after night, day after day. You leave the room, so I don't hear what you say. But I know who he is, and I know what he does, and I know what he means to you. So you're not gonna tell me something that I don't already know. You're not gonna tell me something that I don't already know. You can quit your talking and putting on that show, 'cause you're not gonna tell me something that I don't already know.
Album Real Love, that's David Miles and Night After Night. A big thanks going out to David for stopping by the studio tonight, and be sure to visit halifaxisburning.com to hear this interview again, and hit us up on iTunes for a podcasted version of the interview in the near future. On the way out tonight, we're going to play a little bit of a song from The Burning Hell. They have made their way around the Maritimes in several fashions. They lived in Newfoundland, now they're living in Prince Edward Island. They are consistently touring. They just got back from a tour in Europe and will be playing in Halifax, Nova Scotia on December 5th at Gus's Pub, and in St. John's, Newfoundland on December 8th at The Ship. We're going to leave you with a song from them tonight. It's called Grown Ups. All right, we'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves and one another. Here's a little bit of The Burning Hell on the way home.
You were a Nazi hunter. I was a cockney punter. Used to meet on some rainy English street. You'd be looking sharp, I'd be in a dirty old jumper. Despite our different social stations, despite my lack of vocation, I'd find some piece of crucial information and help you bring a war criminal to justice. We had great imaginations, and we used to wonder, and we used to wonder what would happen, and we used to wonder what would happen to us. Take photographs in the graveyard, back when we were little goth idiots. We used to smoke hash before math class. Everybody did it. And I know we never learned all our lessons, but we did learn some. We used to listen to nostalgic songs with nostalgic chord progressions like this one. And we used to wonder what would happen. We used to wonder what would happen to us. Yes, I did hear all about it. I got the invitation. It's on my fridge, beside the picture of you and your kids. You know, I'd really love to come. I'd really love to see everyone. It's been so long, but by the time you read this,